graduated from the University of Life. All right? I received a degree from the School of Hard Knocks. And our colors were black and blue, baby.
You understand what I'm saying?
You can't handle the truth.
You understand what I'm saying?
I told you to quit.
You understand what I'm saying?
I told you to quit.
You understand what I'm saying?
Welcome to the Student Union, everyone. I'm your host, the Chancellor, Pastor Marcus. Great to have you here with us on the beautiful campus of LCMSU, though it is a bit quiet today because everyone is gone. Yes, your school might be closed down for Christmas. Oops. I mean, winter break. But we aren't. LCMSU is always open.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
We are here in the Student Union on this beautiful mid-December day on the campus of LCMSU with a college student at the end of the semester here. Welcome, Ian Kinney. How are you doing today, Ian?
I'm good. How are you today? I'm
doing fantastic. How does it feel to have finals and all that kind of stuff done?
It's been a long push, but it's finally good to be done.
And you, Ian, is a student at Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. We had Pastor Jared DeBlick on the program about 4 weeks ago. And Ian, why don't you tell us, where are you from? What are you studying? What is your hope to do once you graduate and all that kind of stuff?
Okay, so I am from Belleville, Illinois, so not that far away, only about half an hour from the university. I am currently in the social work program, so my undergraduate will be in a BSW, Bachelor's of Social Work. But then after undergraduate, I'm hoping to go to seminary. So I'll be applying for seminary soon, and hopefully I'll be accepted.
Okay. And you are a junior?
A junior, yes, I am.
Excellent. Well, fantastic. It is great to have you with us here. Are you looking forward to having Christmas? Oh, I should say holiday break, right?
Yeah, I am looking forward to Christmas holiday break, even though it's only a few weeks, but it's still very nice.
Well, I thought it would be nice to have Ian on today and to have a student on to talk about, it's been kind of a crazy semester this fall in the news. Everybody's been hearing all about the crazy PC culture on our campuses at the University of, I think it was the University of Mississippi. They had to take down the Confederate. They didn't take down the Confederate flag. They removed the state flag from their campus because it was offensive, even though it's the state of Mississippi's flagship school. We had, of course, a couple, 3 hours away from where you are, all the protests at the University of Missouri. It seems like every time you turn around, there's talk of protest and racism and social injustice and microaggression and you hurt my feelings. And then, of course, we've had some people step up to the plate, including the president of Oral Roberts University, saying, "Hey, stop your whining. This isn't a daycare. This is college." And it's not an easy thing to be a Christian at a state university. And Ian had written put some of his thoughts down, called Confessions of a Lutheran at a State University. I thought it would be nice to have you on and get your reflections and maybe you and I brainstorming some ideas of how we can kind of be a part of kind of sassing the program back and maybe reaching out to students on campus. So anyways, I thought I would just read through, if it sounds okay with you, Ian, some of your thoughts that you put your pen to, and then maybe we'll talk through it so everybody can kind of listen.
Sure, yeah, that sounds good to me.
So you all sit back, have a cup of coffee, and you can eavesdrop on our conversation. But this is for me and for Confessions of a Lutheran at a State University, and then we'll kind of expand on this a little bit. From the moment I leave the church parking lot on Sunday around noon until I pull back in next Sunday morning around 8, outside of Sunday night Bible study, I don't see another Lutheran, sometimes not even another Christian. There's not even a semblance of Christian community outside of Sunday. You see, I attend a state university. Do you think that's a common thing when you talk to your friends, Ian, that you find out that, is that a common experience that many of our college students have today? Feeling isolated and alone in that way?
Many of our Lutheran students my age at a state university, I would assume they have a very similar experience.
Well, in one of the things that happens is, now you, I didn't mention in the intro, but you you have kind of a modest campus ministry to be a part of. I mentioned Pastor DeBlick. You guys meet on Sunday nights. You have an opportunity to actually have someone to talk to that's local, even though you're not from that far away down in Belleville. But one of the things that we experience, there's a lot of young people out there that that don't have any sense of campus ministry or any sense of kind of the church being at or near a college campus. At Taboo, our National Campus Conference last January, we had over 30 students that came by themselves without anybody. And so it's very easy to feel lonely. It's also probably easy to feel like you can't say much. You go on in your piece here. I sit in my dorm room doing my homework, listening to all the kind of things that slip through the walls from your neighbor. How do you dare to politely mention, have people turn things down or use headphones? I look out my window, I see the way women are objectified and disrespected. It seems like you go on to say, you know, up is now down and left is now right, but it doesn't matter because truth is relative. And that because of what you believe, sometimes you've been labeled as a sexist or chauvinist. Does that actually happen to you?
Yes, it has on occasion.
You don't need to go into specifics, but is that something that you're always having to kind of think in the back of your head? You know, how do I go about, you know, greeting people or saying hello to people or defending things like traditional marriage?
Right. It is always in the back of my mind. Hopefully that it doesn't actually change what I do, but it does always make me conscious that this isn't, you know, this isn't just people that I'm friends with and that understand my worldview and share that worldview. So sometimes it is always in the back of my mind that I have to be conscious of that's we're coming from completely opposite worldviews.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a shame because, you know, in a way, colleges are supposed to be a place where the First Amendment is like the supreme virtue, but it really isn't. You know, you say up is now down and left is now right. Doesn't matter. Truth is relative. It kind of harkens back to Pilate's age-old question of Jesus, what is truth?
What is truth?
And, you know, we live in almost a post-postmodern society in which truth doesn't really matter. Colleges used to be a place where we're supposed to be pursuing truth. And, you know, you can have all sorts of different ways of looking at truth, but you're still looking for truth. But it almost seems anymore like truth isn't what matters, it's whatever you want truth to be. Do you think that's the case today?
I do. I do think that is the case. That if a professor were to teach in a classroom setting that XYZ is the truth, students I would imagine would be confused as that's just not part of the vocabulary anymore because as I so commonly hear, what's true for you is not true for me, even though that in itself is a truth, but that doesn't make any sense either. So it is a very common occurrence that truth is just relative to people.
Well, and you know what happens is, you go on to write, such a university even mentioning countercultural views concerning abortion, assisted suicide, same-sex marriage, etc., can get a student kicked out of class, dropped from a major, etc. University prides itself on inclusivity. That's why if someone disagrees, the school makes sure that the non-inclusiveness is silenced so such bigotry doesn't hurt people's self-esteem. I'm wondering, you know, it's very easy, you know, we as Christians shouldn't have a problem with other people having different truth worldviews about what truth is. What bothers me the most is when our Christian confession is seen as written off right off the bat because we couldn't possibly know anything about truth. Do you feel like that's something that's supposed to be just off the table, that you're not even supposed to bring this up and just argue things on the basis of you know, anything but your religious stance?
Well, a lot of the time what I see is that professors always talk about when you're working in academia or in the professional world that you can't let your biases get in the way. You can't let your biases run how you operate and how you work. And so for myself, I guess they would say that my bias would be my faith. And so for me to work my life and my academics around the fact that abortion is wrong, or that suicide, assisted suicide, is wrong, or that same-sex marriage is wrong, that would be me coming from a biased opinion and would therefore be invalid because they would say I have no facts or whatever their truth may be to back that up. But it's just stemming from my ancient bias.
Yeah, and you know, well, what's interesting, what the problem is, we're more than willing to say, hey, we have bias. Yeah, we have bias to our faith. You know, we don't deny that. Our faith informs who we are and what we believe, and it gives shape to our worldview. The problem is everyone else assumes that they're not biased, that they don't have biases. I've often told people, it's interesting, you're a social work major, in that I did an informal survey about 15 years ago when I was in campus ministry full time of a lot of the folks in campus ministry that were workers, and asked them that those of your students that are in campus ministry, you know, that are, you know, kind of your go-to student leadership types on your college campus, are they more in the soft sciences, of which social work would be a part, the English, history, you know, et cetera, women's studies, religious studies, psychology, sociology, et cetera, or do they tend to be more in the hard sciences, the physical sciences, math, science, engineering, pharmacy, med school, et cetera, et cetera? And I was startled to find out that over 90% of all of our students that were really in leadership, now it wasn't a formal study, but it was like 9-1, were in the hard sciences, because it's kind of hard if you are a civil engineer, you know, you still have to believe that 2 + 2 = 4. You know, I always tell people, you don't want to drive over a bridge that a postmodern civil engineer made, because a bridge where everybody was going on the assumption that 2 + 2 = 5, because that was their truth, is not a bridge that you want to drive on.
No.
And so it's really hard. I mean, it's still, even though we have concerns with evolution and different, science is still science and numbers are still numbers. And it's almost easier for in those fields for truth to kind of remain somewhat black and white. But when you move over to the soft sciences, and I would think social work is that way. Have you found that to be the case, that it's kind of like open itself up to whatever anybody subjectively wants to make it?
Yeah, I have found that quite a bit, and that survey is interesting. And I have found that quite a bit, because even though I've gotten a professor to say that the social work values and ethics and code that people who end up being social workers are compelled to follow, what professor has said that comes out of a strictly Christian worldview, in the fact that life has value, people are valuable, and things like that. But then there's also part of the ethics is self-determination. And so the fact this person has self-determined that they would like to participate in physician-assisted suicide, who am I to tell them that that's not for them to do? Even though I see that as wrong, they do not see that as wrong. And so it's not my place for them to tell them they can't do that.
You move on in your article to say, and then the things that you've written down here, to be fair, students can believe whatever they want as long as it doesn't conflict with anyone else's beliefs and as long as they don't talk about it or act on it. Every day at universities, state universities, Christians are compelled to step in line And I really want to focus on this pagan ritual of tolerance. Tolerance. Tell us more about this whole idea of tolerance. Isn't that kind of one of the chief buzzwords on campus?
Oh yes, it's not even the buzzword. It's the word. It's the end all be all of I would say university worldviews, is that we have to tolerate everyone, because to not do so would be very pig-headed and uninclusive.
That wasn't very tolerant to pigs.
No, it's not very tolerant to pigs, is it? And that's almost the point of it. It has to end somewhere, doesn't it?
So sure. The pigs are now offended that you have spoken of them that way. Then, so
exactly.
I apologize,
and now the pigs are offended.
To all the pigs listening to the program today.
So excuse me, I do apologize to the pigs. So maybe we'll use bigotry. So it's very bigoted to talk that way about people, because they come from maybe a different culture where such a thing does not work the same way, so we have to be tolerant of their beliefs. But the problem is that, like you said, it's obviously absurd that we're, you know, the pigs are offended, but that is where it goes, isn't it? I mean, if we take tolerance to its end, and we're tolerant of all people at all times, where does it end? Does it end with the person who has just sexually assaulted someone? We have to be tolerant. So it's almost just confusing. Where is the line drawn? And then it's just a line in the sand. Since, like you mentioned before, it's just relative. So it's very confusing. But it's we have to step into this step in line for tolerance, because we have to be tolerant. So it's a very, very big value that's valued at universities.
Now, do you feel are a white male Christian? Do you feel like you're tolerated in terms of the worldview that you bring to the table, or do you feel like you're just supposed to tolerate everybody else on campus, but aren't really, you know, to bring what you bring to the table?
That's an interesting question.
Because you are, you know, you have a lot of double whammies against you. You have a triple whammy there. You know,
I do.
There's no quotas or discounts on campus for being a white male Christian. I mean, it goes without saying that, you know, you are, you know, oftentimes you were, you know, and here we are in the Missouri Synod, you know, the vast majority of our people are white. Obviously they're Christian. We have male and female, but, it's almost, I have noticed anyways that, you know, my son's getting ready to go off to school, and it's like, well, hey son, you know, there aren't a lot of scholarships out there for white male Christians because you don't fulfill the quota, because you're seen as part of the problem. And that does seem to me to be kind of how it is. And, you know, I guess it is how it is. And, one of the things that, and I want to talk a little bit here about how can we address our, you know, how can our college students address their friends and neighbors and other classmates? You mentioned here, last little section I'll read. All these dogmas implant themselves like a virus in the thought process of unsuspecting college freshmen and fester until graduation. Then they get to take this new way of thinking out into the world and let it infect everyone around them. And the more people who get infected, the more normal the disease seems. And it seems like I always tell people that in many ways college campuses, these aren't your college campuses that your parents and grandparents went to.
No.
You know, in fact, it's interesting, you know, you asked before, well, where does this tolerance lead? It leads to intolerance. We actually, under the banner of being tolerant, are becoming intolerant. I mean, there are literally college students protesting on our college campuses to take away First Amendment rights in the name of intolerance. It's just
right.
Absolutely absurd. That, you know, for all of you hippies out there that were on our campuses in the 60s and 70s, you know, defending and rioting for the First Amendment and the freedom of expression, I hate to say it, we almost need you to go back to school and teach some of these younger kids. There you go. Pastor Zill is calling all hippies. No, but I mean, it's insane that just a generation and a half ago, it's all about freedom of expression. Now it's about limiting expression. But our college campuses are an incubator of these ideas, good or bad. So let's talk for just, we have maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes left here. How do you talk to your friends, your classmates, as a Christian college student with very strong black and white views about some certain, you know, buzzwords and issues of the day without coming across like a jerk or having an opportunity to actually have dialogue with those that don't share your views? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, it's a tough question, and it's one I've struggled with and talked to pastors about for quite a while. Because a few decades ago, my parents and grandparents' generations, we could all have conversations about these kind of things, and we could all basically work from the same vocabulary. But now we can't do that. No one knows what certain words even mean. If I call someone a sinner, they don't even know what I mean. All they know is that I've offended them. So what I've seen that works the best is to just build a relationship of some sort with them as a classmate, as a friend, as a colleague. Build a relationship with them and be kind, obviously, convicted in the love of Christ, and work with them to show them that, okay, so maybe Christianity is not just these people I see on TV, throwing things at abortion clinics or burning places down, things like that.
The Westboro Baptist kind of
exactly.
At
so you hear these
facts.
Big names and things on the internet and TV about like the Westboro Baptist Church. So maybe not all Christians are like the Westboro Baptist Church. But then some people, either whether or not they're very, very intelligent or don't understand almost anything at all, being biblically illiterate or just illiterate in general, don't understand how to have these conversations. So what I've seen is that all you can do is be as kind as possible, working in the conviction and the love of Christ, and build a relationship with them. And you may not even see the results of such a relationship. Which is and can be depressing to not be able to see the results, but then hoping that eventually somewhere down the line, a fellow Christian will be able to pick up where you left off with this person.
You know, that's beautifully said, and that's frankly why I wanted to have you on the program, because that's I think you nailed it right on the hit the head right on the nail. That the bottom line is, you know, today, our culture doesn't have the same vocabulary that we do when we think about the kingdom of the right and the kingdom of the church. We are becoming biblically illiterate, even among those. I mean, 20, 30 years ago, even people that weren't Christians knew who Noah was or Adam or even yeah. Jesus. And now there's just a functional illiteracy. But also when we look to the kingdom of the left, which is ruled more by natural law and reason and logic, we almost can't assume that people know how to really think in reasonable categories in that kingdom either. And so the best that is, you know, first of all, I think it's important for all of you students out there to realize, and I think Ian would agree, you'd agree with this, that we need to be ready to confess. No, we're not facing persecution like other Christians that are genuinely persecuted in a very literal and direct way, and maybe even, you know, with their lives on the line. It's kind of more of a soft tyranny that's taking place. And, you know, we have no promise that anybody's going to love us just as they didn't love Jesus. And so we have to expect this. But we have to not back down either. But whatever we do, we need to talk with kindness and demonstrate to your friends and neighbors on campus that the love of Christ is in you, and maybe they won't like you for it, but the time will come that when they need someone to talk to, they might turn to you, and because of the example that you've given. So anyways, does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good answer. It would have been very intolerant of you to not say yes.
Well, we don't want that. I do not want that.
You know what? By virtue of, I think you're going to make a great pastor someday, and thank you for what you do. Thank you for sticking with it on our college campuses in some way. you're getting a wonderful training to go and be a pastor and being out in the world. And in my capacity as a chancellor of LCMSU, as far as I'm concerned, you've already graduated college and you have been granted acceptance to one of our seminaries. So if something doesn't work out, let me know and I'll make sure I deal with it.
I do appreciate that. Thank you. I'll just pack my things down.
Well, great to talk to you today, Ian. Good luck with everything. Have a wonderful Christmas break, celebrating Christ, receiving his gifts, and the joy that you have in Christ and with your family. And we'll look forward to seeing you down the line.
Yes, thank you. You as well, Pastor.
Hey, have a great Christmas, everyone. Enjoy your family, your well-deserved time off. You've earned a break from all the PC craziness on campus, but if you get a little bored, check out our archives at kfuo.org that you may have missed. No matter what, remember, wherever you are, you're always welcome here, because college is tough. You need Jesus, and we'll help.